This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. To the larger service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H
for community and country.
4-H
respond to food security.
4-H
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H.
All right, folks, thanks for listening in. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio, 1.3 Sound FM, and this is going to be episode number 68. And my guest for episode 68, I am delighted to see two guests in studio here. And first, from left to right, is Richard Chirma. I'm saying that right, I hope.
Chirma.
Okay. And his son, Alex. Alexander, or do you like Alex?
Alex is fine.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about a great blog that Alex wrote in a local food link. What do we call food link? It's a local agricultural based website for.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit foundation there, and it focuses on promoting local food and making it more accessible and affordable to people.
Yeah.
And I just wrote a little blog piece in their blog section on their website.
And so I got wind of this, and I'm just delighted to have Richard Alexander come on the show here and talk a little bit about it. So tell us how did you get connected up with Foodlink? Tell us a little bit about how you got started with them.
Well, I originally heard of Foodlink while working at the vegetable CSA this past season, harvest season, at Savannah's Family Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Dale, the farmer there, the head farmer, is closely affiliated with Foodlink. I believe he's on the board. And so I had heard about it through him. So after finishing the season there and after learning so much and seeing the side of agriculture that I never knew about, I decided to call Foodlink up and see how I could help and see what steps I could take to kind of further my understanding and help other people further theirs.
Mm-hmm. So you got a good grounding in agriculture from a result of that big effort out there, and probably your thoughts are with those people as they stash everything away for the winter and make plans for next year.
Absolutely,
So we'll talk some more about that, Alex. Let's play a song to begin with, and as you know, we like to have our guests bring along some music, and you have very kindly brought along four songs.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we play "Winter Winds" by Humphrey and Hump?
Mumford and Sons.
Mumford and Sons.
Yeah, that's right.
You can tell the fellow that's not. Okay. So you like this one, and tell us why you like the song and where you first heard it.
Well, I first heard it when they released their album, and it just really reminds me of winter, and I thought it was appropriate given the strong winter winds that are kind of building right now, and I think everyone will enjoy it, and it's kind of a testament to the area, and I think people will kind of enjoy the seasonality of it.
All right, let's play it. We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to CKMS Radio 1.3 Sound FM on your best and local community radio station. It's the Agriculture Show. We will be right back.
Was it love or fear of the cold that led us through the night? For every kiss, your beauty trumped my doubt. And my hand told my heart, let love grow. But God that I once loved was the same that sent me into your arms. Oh, and pestilence is won when you are lost and I am gone, and no hope, no hope will overcome. But if your stripe strikes at your sleep, remember spring swamp snow.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Some other music playing there. Okay, we're back. It's the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 1.3 Sound FM. My guest today is Alexander Trima, and we're talking a little bit about agriculture and in the sense that as an agriculture show, we like to bring along news to our listeners, mostly urban, about what's happening on the farm and so on. And Alexander is really well placed to do that. Alex, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a graduate of the Laurier Business Program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recently graduated just last spring, mm-hmm. and I actually had the opportunity to start working on a vegetable farm upon graduation, a little bit different than a lot of my fellow classmates, the routes that they would have taken.
Yeah, you'll have quite the story when you have your first reunion next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the guys are working for this kind of thing and you're farming.
It's funny, every time I explain to them what I'm on to now, and they are surprisingly, that's really cool, that's great. Mm. I wish I was doing that right now kind of thing. So it's interesting how it is kind of perceived by other people a little differently than maybe even I thought it would have been. So
you find it pretty common. I think a lot of people would have that vision in their mind that, yeah, they'd like to get out to nature and they'd like to put their hands in the dirt and do that and work with animals, but you actually did it.
Yeah. Maybe not as much with the animals as some of the farmers, but in the vegetable world, it's a kind of a different animal on its own. I'm seeing a lot of insects and things and birds and deer even just come around and eat the crop. So it's kind of a very diverse and exciting area, more so than people may even think.
Yeah. Well, it was really well written what you said there, and this is a good story for our listeners. Do you think You know, I'm just thinking of you and your classmates, and do you think there's careers in agriculture that are business-based, like your training? Is that maybe kind of a, you know, obviously agriculture has its own sort of interesting financial demands and needs business people to help organize and run things. Is there, would that have been a core subject when you were at university, for instance, do you think?
Well, most of the talk of agriculture while I was in the business administration program was around things like hedging for risk, and risk is a big thing in agriculture, particularly futures and swaps and things like that to kind of manage the variation of commodity prices. So from that perspective, there's a big role to be played when dealing with large populations and a large amount of risk on farms that may only do corn, soybeans, wheat, things like that. So from that perspective, there was a good understanding of the financial mechanisms behind it.
Right.
The spot where I saw there could be a little more of a holistic approach approaching agriculture in general is the intangibles, the things you can't really measure on the balance sheet. And from my experience on a farm and from my own experience from a nutritional standpoint, I found that there is a lot to be learned, and more of this information has to go into the price mechanism when it comes to pricing local food and how it's grown. And you can go to a car dealership and kind of get the specifications on the car and kind of know how it's made, but if you go to the grocery store, it's fairly difficult to find exactly how it was made, how much nutrition is in it. And I think that is where we can make a lot of strides and promote local food.
And that's good. That's a good cause. And something you said at the beginning there, it's really made a lot of sense, you know, is like how do you value the intangibles? You know, there's just for our conversation purposes, I know the European farmers have a slightly different administrative and regulatory framework over there, but it includes what our previous guest had mentioned about ecological goods and services and cultural things like preserving you know, an old abandoned site on rural lands. And in my opinion, they're very active in making sure that those landowners who are normally would get their incomes only from how many tons of corn and how many pounds of beef they sell also get an income stream from those other intangibles, tourism, keeping open vistas, cultural sites. Are we kind of on the same track here? Is that
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I recently discovered the Ontario Culinary Tourism Association. They are doing a lot of good work in trying to promote the side of culinary tourism, because that's a big portion of what attracts people to Ontario, what we grow, and how they can experience that in the best possible way. I believe they're even trying to develop a new certification called Feast On, which is basically ON for Ontario. I thought that was great when I first saw that, and that would be basically to make sure the restaurant is truly staying within the confines of Ontario agriculture if they are in fact promoting that they do
food, right.
So it's a certification that I find would be really great, and I think this is a good avenue from culinary tourism to actually kind of encourage this movement and encourage a more intelligent and eloquent way to produce our food and experience our food.
You know, it's funny, they just actually the provincial legislature just passed the Local Food Act. And, you know, I can't remember the last time there was, they all agreed. You know, this was a one issue that all three parties, major parties, agreed to, that they should pass the Local Food Act. And you know what? It does seem that in that, if I saw the preliminaries correctly, there was some idea of, you know, if you're going to say it's local, this is the distance it has to be, like 100 kilometers or 50 kilometers, whatever it might be, for the various gradations. So. Did you learn how to cook in your experience? Of
Well, more so towards the end of my university career, of course. I mean, my days of craft dinner are behind me, but I found it quite exhilarating to discover new things around me that I didn't know about. For example, Bailey's Local Foods is a great organization that I joined and was able to get some things that I wouldn't have already gotten from Stevanus's farm, more animal products and things like that. But it's just a great useful organization to kind of bring people together. And I think shortening that supply chain, I think, as Angie said in one of the previous shows, and I completely agree with, and I think she's right on, hit the nail on the head, is that shortening that supply chain will not only empower the farmer to produce more and more locally, but also give them a fair wage for what they're producing. And that kind of rolls back to the intangibles as well. People can go and actually see the food, see how it's grown, the diversity of a CSA and all the benefits from having it grown locally and having that connection straight with the farmer.
You know, it's you probably experienced it too. Customers come in and they want to know how something's done, and they're trying to rationalize these headlines you see in the paper about local and organic, and what does it mean? And, you know, you try to explain, do you have a sense that you're trying to explain to people what it is and how it is or isn't various, how it fits into various categories?
Oh, yeah, like, exactly. It's very difficult to explain a concept. You almost have to experience, especially, I'll give you a good example, things like garlic. Selling garlic to the restaurants may not be lucrative for us, because they can get it from China much cheaper.
Right.
But me, I like garlic, and I taste raw garlic to kind of see the differences, and it's great for cooking and things like that. But that difference in the tenacity of the taste, you have to experience. You can't really explain to a customer. They won't quite understand it, especially if they're not someone who cooks their own meals.
Got it.
If they're used to more easy ways of eating and maybe not tasting every aspect of a dish.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an attitude that I see changing over time, and it'll be quite exciting when it does more so.
Well, we have lots more to talk about here. That's great. We better play another song here so we can catch our breath and figure out where we're going to next. I just wanted to... I got the old playlist going here, and I'm looking at a song by Rush, I guess it is, right?
The Trees, yes.
The Trees. Yeah, let's do that. That's how it lined up in my playlist. It's done. So we'll play that one. So Rush is a good Canadian band. Is that the same band?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And this is called The Trees. Now, where did you hear this song?
I heard it upon listening to one of Rush's albums. I was just kind of, as I went along, and this one caught my ear in particular. Just the lyrics alone are really a great kind of lesson and something to think about. It doesn't really give an answer, but it just makes you think about kind of some of the social economic issues that people often converse about. So I think this is an underrated song, not often heard, and I hope you guys like it.
Well, I think they will. We'll play it. We'll be back, folks. This is Air Cultural on CKMS Radio 1.3 Sound FM. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Alex Shimura from Waterloo, Ontario. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Couldn't have been said I ever did it myself, Alex. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thank you.
I think I'd like to introduce our guest, too. Your dad's here, Richard, who I know. Hi, Rich. Good to see you.
Hi, Jeff.
We were just talking off the air that, after you and Alex do this, and you're off to another son over there in Guelph, you're looking well, so... Are you decided to go out and do some farming with these guys one of these days?
You know what? Yeah? I mean, Alex has kind of taught me a few things that, or maybe I should say re-taught me the things I knew when I was a kid. And I saw my grandmother out, tilling her 1 acre garden.
Yep.
and picking fresh tomatoes off the plants and how that makes you feel, right? Mm. It's more so than just getting it off the shelf in the grocery store. Yeah. And so there's something I'm learning from him all over again.
Well, we're going to look forward to that part of the show now. We're in the third segment. We'll talk a little bit about more the specifics of the blog and just exactly as you said, Richard, about the feeling you get as you're doing the work, not as much as how it I don't want to take away your thunder, but you just don't consume food. It has a history. It has some effort and some thought. If that's an adequate start.
That was a great start.
So, Alex, tell our listeners, and I get this 100%, but I'd love to hear from your own words, is, what do people need to know about food production that they just, that they should know and hope to experience themselves and at least have an awareness of it?
I think fundamentally, when you just look outside and see how many different types of plants there are, how many different types of insects, and how they all work together and create such a diversity that's been around for millions and millions of years, you start to go back to that sense of awe, that sense of wonder that you had as a child, and maybe have to relearn again, much as my father just explained. And for me, I've kind of been disconnected from that for a little while now and was not brought up on a farm, so I didn't have firsthand experience with that. But understanding that the very diversity that's around me is so complex that I may not be able to understand it fully myself, I find that sense of awe, that sense of wonder, that sense of being connected with that, that's how we sustain ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling and that connection is something, when lost, I find takes away from my experiencing this life. Mm-hmm. So I think others might learn from that and could find solace in kind of working with the land and understanding that sometimes you don't have to be thinking about a problem all the time. You can kind of work with nature and kind of be in a natural state where what you're putting into it isn't just labor. It's kind of forging something that's intangible, and as my dad alluded to, you get a feeling. So I developed that feeling over the summer, and I feel as though a lot of people are making strides. I actually have some friends who started their own gardens in their house, and even if you don't in it, I see a lot of people who came out to the Vegetable CSA to see the farm that they're getting their produce from, bringing their kids out to see it. So there's a lot of steps being taken in that direction. I think it's a result of the problems associated not having that connection with the environment around us.
That's a good point. We can't all participate in this at this level or that level. None's perfect, but all have considered it. All have considered that, one would like to have a gardener. I want to go to the farmer and see what's going on. In fact, I will work on the farm like yourself, like you've done there. So even the guys who had the garden on the balcony.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Making that connection.
Urban farmers, yeah.
Urban farmers, and that's good because did you have any thought about, one of the things that happens nowadays, I don't make a long story short, but basically, so they're reporting that, 20% of food doesn't even get to the table hot and ready to eat, but gets thrown out.
Waste.
And I just sort of think, you know, if people, it just shows like there should be some more reverence for food, and not not a punitive reverence, but an enjoyment of the fact. The idea of throwing out food seems kind of weird to me.
Yeah, you know? So I've completely changed the way I thought about the scraps. If I was young and I didn't want to eat something, I wouldn't want to eat it. I'd try and, you know, pass it off to my siblings or something, right?
Right.
As you grow up, though, and you have to start feeding yourself, you realize, wow, this is really something that I should take a little more seriously and have a little closer to my heart. Mm-hmm. So I've started a compost pile, and if for some reason food goes bad or I didn't finish it, it's not really waste. It's going to go back to the mm-hmm. soil, and I'm going to use it to make more food. So from that perspective, it's kind of working into the sustainability that everyone talks about.
The whole idea of disposability seems kind of weird. Like, you look at the kind of work and effort it takes to grow something.
Yeah.
And to think of it as a disposable item, like a pan or something, seems... not quite right.
Yeah, you're manifesting some energy for yourself, and once you work with that, you realize that, well, this is kind of a cycle. Like, everything feeds back into itself, and I want to be a part of that. I don't want to throw it out into a landfill and have it just accumulate a bunch of gases in Mount Trashmore or something.
Well,
that's true.
Like our previous guests were talking about methane off of food manure in that case.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so put it to use. So, and I'm glad I'm glad Richard is here to talk about your previous eating habits, just in case.
Neither Alex nor any of his brothers or sister would eat squash that I prepared for him. And now I think maybe he's getting the point.
Yeah.
I believe that sometimes you have to let people suffer for a while before they come around. And I've certainly come around. I've been eating squash a lot recently, and it's great seasonal food in the fall and winter.
Yeah.
It's amazing stuff. Pumpkin and all those types of vegetables. When you go out there and work the land and actually mm-hmm. harvest it, you start to really prepare it a little better. You start to really feel that connection. So that's something I wish to promote. And for me, it really did start with looking at it from a nutritional perspective mm-hmm. as well. There's a reason why our ancestors ate all these foods and prepared them certain ways. So just seeing all the different incidents that people don't like to see, cancer, heart disease, we can kind of go back to the drawing board and see, okay, exactly where did we start going wrong here?
Yeah.
Where do we start seeing too many of these incidences, and why? So from my own experience and research, and I hope to point others in the same direction, when you look into these things, a lot can be found in going back to whole natural foods.
Yeah. Well, that's where we all came from. And, you know, processed foods are a modern miracle, but I don't think anyone was meant to eat that all the time exclusively.
Oh,
that can't
sure.
be right.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
A lot of scientists are finding the same things, and I encourage other people to look into the same topics as well.
Yeah.
Going back to Weston A. Price, a dentist in the 1920s, he was alarmed at the number of dental caries he found in patients, and wondered if there are cultures around the world who did not have any, and to see what they eat. And he actually did find many cultures who ate a very wide variety. So if you debate animal products versus just solely vegetation, there's not really a big difference in terms of being able to achieve perfect health, and he found that.
Yeah.
So he found whole natural foods are the way to go, and they found a lot of foods are sacred, and there's a reason why.
So have you got a nice, simple eating guide that you use personally, like a little bit of green, a little bit of red fruit, a little bit of yellow? Is there any of the popular food guides that you kind of get, or do you just kind of do you have a favorite food guide of yours?
Well, for me, I think the biggest, from what I've found, the biggest recommendation I would make is try and see exactly how we've been eating or have evolved eating for thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
See what your body indicates is good for you. And a lot of people come from different cultures who may have bodies that are designed to eat certain more breads and cheeses or more vegetation.
I was thinking was that for most people, buying food was the convenience of going to the store and it's out again. And if you could make it, you could either teach people how to cook, which is a whole other topic,
mm-hmm.
right? To get people that could prepare their own food, they probably do a lot better job of eating. But what sort of simple things can people who are just kind of thinking about maybe buying more local food that would motivate them to do that, or try to pick certain things at a grocery store. And like, there's, and you're well versed in all the different perspectives of food because that's your interest. And what could you pass on to a typical Waterloo, Kitchener Waterloo resident about when you food, do these three things?
Here's the thing. I found that even back in the day, people liked faster food, food that was easier to eat quickly, right?
Okay.
And people like that today. Yep. So we shouldn't scare them away by saying you need to spend a lot of time cooking and preparing your food.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, cheese and bread are simple things that you can bring out to work, and they stay well. And the main difference today, though, is instead of sourdough bread naturally leavened as it was normally made, today we have baker's yeast. And this doesn't allow the natural fermentation of the bread. So a lot of people may have this thing called gluten intolerance. So another thing I found was some companies altered the enzyme in bread to make it more squishy for longer on the shelf.
Makes sense.
So it's also harder to digest, though. So going back to these simple things, a lot of people who have gluten intolerance actually can eat sourdough breads when naturally leavened. So another thing is lactose intolerance. I can't have milk, but I can have cheeses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of that trade-off there, in that some people believe pasteurization alters proteins in milk and makes for more milk allergies than we've ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
And some people even believe that, although they claim it's for safety, that raw milk is actually harder to inoculate with pathogens than pasteurized milk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've read some of that stuff too. Like, I know, you know, I grew up on a farm. We drank our own milk too, because and then so, you know, the membranes are intact. Has been pasteurized. There's all kinds of thinking on it.
Or homogenized, yeah.
You know, it's really that milk thing is a really good debate, because one of the founding societies in Ontario, in the sense of a social group, was, I think it's Women's Institute, and they got established because they wanted milk pasteurization was the number one way to save people. You know, it's
interesting.
And you know, so that's how they got started, and it gravitated the way they went, and the Health Act stipulates pasteurization. You know what, it just got to be because it's just a matter of odds that you maybe give up a little bit of healthiness of raw milk for the general larger good of not spreading a contagion, even a mild bacterial upset across all kinds of people. So
for sure.
Everything's a trade-off, as you know. Like, there's nothing, no perfect robot or computer or food like that. And you get a little bit of one or the other. So
yeah, I always like to try and play devil's advocate and see what's going on. I know in Ireland they're looking for pasteurization, so they're kind of on the fence right now whether or not they should fully commit to it. And I found a kind of a perspective from a Dr. William Campbell Douglas in Ireland, and he said pasteurization is the hammer that industry uses to nail down control of everyone's milk money. Without pasteurization laws, farmers can sell directly to consumers and earn a good living. So that's his perspective, and it's kind of interesting to see that, and it should be open to debate, I think.
Well, it's interesting. Like in Ontario, they just happened, a prominent Ontario cabinet minister, his family were buying raw milk products from the Schmidt family. And so and all those issues were covered. And in fact, it was funny to determine that. In fact, you know, each of us here in the room can put whatever we want down our mouth. I can't stop you from doing whatever. Mm-hmm. So therefore, raw milk should be illegal or should not be prosecuted. But it's also true that the same process that did establish that pasteurization is a requirement for health from the health department. So they just illustrated the obvious, that if you want to have raw milk, you should be. They shouldn't be persecuted. But, you know, it's...
For
sure. It's a day that goes on. Let's play another song.
Yeah.
And we'll be back for a little bit of a wrap-up on this and whatever we can want to talk about next year. Actually, you got two more great songs, so we better talk some more. But let's get this first song going here.
Yep.
I've got Let It Snow by Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
There's an old crooner. That's going to be a great one.
You know, we could Lindy Hop to that.
That's true. It'd be a great easy-going dance tune.
Yeah.
All right, so let's play this song. We'll be back with the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio with Sound FM, and we'll see you in a short bit.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. since we've no place to go. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Sitting by the fire's cozy glow, he don't care about the cold and the winds that blow. He just says, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Let it snow.
Ooh-wee, goes the star. Why should he worry when he's nice and warm? His gal by his side and the lights turn low. He just says, let it snow, let it snow.
I don't care.
Weather outside is frightful, but that fire is delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought lots of corn for popping. The lights are way down low, so let it snow, let it snow, let it snow,
let it snow.
When we finally say goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll only hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. Long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
This is Joel Johnson from BASF Canada. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, so we're back, and we're in the last segment with my guest today, Alexander Chirma, and his dad's here, Richard. Good to see you. And we just occurred that maybe we ought to talk a little bit about the website or where the blog is on. Anything, any other, you know, let's do that one first, and any other links you might like to mention.
Sure. Yeah, so if you can go on to foodlink.ca, you'll find my blog there in the blog section. In the middle of December, I think it came up around the 16th or so. And if you just take a look at that, you'll see kind of my personal story, and I can talk about a little bit about it now just in case you don't have a chance right at the moment. So basically, it was about my time there and developing my new relationship with thinking. So from going into a farm job from a desk job, it was certainly out of my comfort zone to some degree. So I developed a new relationship with my mind. Instead of having my mind constantly working to figure out problems, I was able to kind of have it an idol or only bring it about when I needed to. So for those of you who have issues with too much thinking, maybe restlessness and not being able to get to sleep because you're thinking of all the problems you have, this is a very great therapy because not only are you doing physical movements, but you're also calming your mind at the same time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was reading somewhere that the best way to learn something is if you're thinking about something but it's associated with a physical action. Mm-hmm. Like that's how we learned as a species. Is that you can't just intellectualize everything. You can't learn anything just by being physical.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow those two processes, the cognitive and whatever we call the other, they need each other to actually cement long-term memory and to develop processes of thinking. So, you know, I've always... you probably watched old movies where a bunch of people will be cutting sugarcane or working as a farm group, and they'll be singing or chanting. And you know, I get that. Like it's you sort of they had developed its own rhythm, and it's not you, it's us. It's this larger group. It's sort of like it gives you some spatiality to because heavens knows we can all really dwell on our own stuff way too much.
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I found it was quite, it made sense to me that some of those times when you're really working hard and it's just a steady, maybe it's the equivalent of people who knit for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you knit something and their hands are busy and let your mind be free. So you can be actually physically working, but it's a great time for your mind to really go wherever it wants to because your body's occupied.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Does that all make sense a little bit here?
Oh, yeah,
that's what I read into your stuff and I thought it was great.
Yeah, and I find it's not about thinking less. It's about thinking more effectively and more right. positively. And I think that's really helped in terms of knowing when to think and when not to think. So when I go to bed, I don't need to think. So it's really easy for me now to, after doing this, to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, when I'm out there, when you take care of anything, you kind of feel a sense of connection with it and gratitude for it. So when you can take care of a crop, you're really putting your mind and soul into it. And you really feel yourself as a part of a bigger picture. I mean, I'm helping people to eat,
mm-hmm.
and it's not just about me, it's about everyone, and it's about helping this crop succeed. So it's humbling, and it's a very good exercise, and I would recommend anyone to do it and to support the local farmers who do it on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good story, and you can hope it'd be nice when those guys can make enough of a living there, and they do okay now, I think. But it's also true that to make it a viable job opportunity for people, that would be really cool because you want to, if you got something you can make a living at and you enjoy, that's even better.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably a whack of people wouldn't mind doing more with agriculture, but if it's really a struggle to think about, well, do I really want to not to really limit my
Yeah.
income potential.
Yeah, so. It is a big risk, but again, you can diversify, and diversification is something I learned at business school, and it certainly applies to agriculture as well. And I think any small steps that people can take, from composting to having a small garden to at least joining a CSA or finding ways to buy vegetables from mm-hmm. locally, I think all those small steps will empower you and make it seem a little easier to incrementally shape the local agriculture scene.
So how many people are you graduating from your class, sir? How big is your graduating class?
Remember?
100 people?
A little more than that, I think. Yeah. Probably a couple hundred.
Yeah. It'd be interesting what they're all doing, huh?
it's for sure, yeah. I imagine a lot of them in desk jobs, but some people may have taken my route. Well,
They might.
We'll have to see.
Maybe they've taken a job out in the oil patch to pay off their college education.
Maybe they went out to Alberta.
Yeah, but, there was always a time when people would do that. They'd go someplace to, if they had a goal financially, whatever, to get that done, and then quite a choice. But people would say working on a farm seems kind of odd too. So whatever, what works for you.
Save a lot in groceries. That's for sure.
Yeah. So that CSA model is really an interesting one. I do think that that's in the future. That's how things will be. Is that because the whole point is, what's fair about somebody trying to grow, a guy or girl growing food, and you struggle through a season, you lay all the cash out front, and it becomes, a decision at the moment of sale when it's ready. It's just, that's hardly a business model. It's mm-hmm. really, the thing about it is, it's so wonderful that, you actually get your buyers to help pay, put the crop in. That just seems, I don't know why we didn't do that before.
Oh,
duh.
Yeah. It's amazing, yeah. The trouble is very difficult to find new buyers and then convince them to buy what you have, especially, as I said, when it's difficult to see, the nutrition. Like, how is this different bok choy than I get from China?
I know. But we're habituated to that because it is true. We can go to any store and buy where we want, and it's a retailer's problem to if you have gotten it there, done all the regulations for most things is an arbitrary or maybe I will, maybe I won't decision.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Brutal.
Oh, yeah, and CSA is a brilliant model, and I think it should be implemented a lot more, especially from a business perspective, because you're sharing the risk, you're creating more certainty, and I think it's just an amazing way to do business.
Mm-hmm. And you care more about what it is you bought because you've been involved in the process of getting it.
Yeah, you feel a part of it, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so that seems good to me.
Yeah, and a lot of members of the CSA send out their kids to work at the farm, and I think that's common, and I think it's a great practice, at the very least visiting the farm mm-hmm. to see how it's done. And you just feel a lot more connected, build community, and Angie was talking about that connection there and building relationships. I mean, it gives you a lot of more intangible assets than you realize. Mm-hmm. So you're getting more for your dollar in many respects.
Sounds like a real winning situation. Mm-hmm. I hope there's good luck with that. Let's play another song here before we wrap up this show. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we play the next song? I guess we'll just
talk about anything, really.
But. I know. You got lots of stuff on the go there. I think we've done a pretty good job here. But let's play one more song here. I'd just love to get all the songs on that you've listed here. Mm-hmm. So, and this is a classic. This is White Christmas, and this is by Shania Twain.
And Michael Bublé, yep.
Oh, my goodness.
It's kind of a duet, and two Canadian vocalists who are very talented.
Yeah.
And I hope you enjoy it.
It'll be very sweet and also satisfies our Canadian content.
Of course.
Regulations for this station. We'll be right back.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and the children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. The snow said, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days, be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
I'm Rory Box from Scotland. You're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the farmer producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Okay. We're in the last of our show today, and that was a guest from a bunch of young farmers I had on the show some middle of summer, and it was quite fun. Okay, we're in the last bit of the show today. My guests today are Alexander Cherma and his dad, Richard. So we're just yakking between sets here as we do our last segment, and you went on the website for this station and saw some of the previous guests, and you recognized Angie Cook, who is Fertile, what's her?
I think it was Fertile Ground.
Fertileground.ca. And I also had a guest on a couple of years ago, when we first started this broadcast 2 years ago. His name was, I think it was Joe Vink, and he represented the Waterloo Hen Association. And so any impressions of those two guests I had on? What's new in that? What's new in the chickens business for Waterloo in Kitt City Kitchener or Waterloo? I understand that in Waterloo, those people had birds before. Our grandfather, they continue to have birds, but the city would not allow anybody who chose to have chickens in their backyard now to do that. Is that, mm-hmm. that still true, do you know?
Yeah, I believe it is. Okay. I think since 2009 yeah. it's been the case.
But they're missing out on great things here.
Yes. I find it quite interesting as a young person kind of trying to get my feet wet and learn as much as I can about locally and sustainably produced food. I find it interesting that we can't, if you're in the city center, to have chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we do allow battery hens raised in factories. So luckily I am zoned agricultural, so if I did choose, I could do such a thing and see the benefits that come with having chickens as pets.
Now, do you know that the whole battery chicken laying, that's changing, because they've got this new code of practice, and chickens are in there, and they've adopted new standards for how you can raise those chickens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really cool. Great. Like, you know, people say that, and they should be, concerned about animal welfare, and in fact, there are ways people can put their message out there. And I know the chickens, I think, are done, but the hogs are just going through that process.
Oh, yeah.
So, but that doesn't... I mean, the thing is, the beauty of being in Canada is you can pick what style you want, and you can just avoid all that and have your own backyard chickens. Take it away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great idea,
That's
right?
something I'm certainly looking yeah. into, and I promote other people to as well. And just from a business perspective, looking at the price differences, the price people can command for free-range, no genetically modified feed, mm-hmm. No antibiotics, and the price they can command for those eggs is quite a bit higher. And once people are more educated, they are willing to pay that. And I think there's a big demand for these eggs, and I often go to look for them, and they are sold out. So I think there's a huge gap there in demand and supply. And the more people who can, and I think that is a result of not being able to have that quick accessibility to mm-hmm. raise your own. And legally, you are handcuffed.
Mm-hmm. I know why I've talked to some other people, and part of the beauty of the backyard chickens was some of the things in facts of life you could be teaching, you know, that the chickens are small, then they get bigger, they lay eggs, mm-hmm. they quit laying eggs, and then they die. That sort of whole process. Normal life things happen, and you can explore this like you have with your pet dog or something, but it's also chickens are great, a great way for a lot of parents who want to, you know, have the chance to share with their child as they grow up, these issues in life like that, birth
exactly.
and death.
Yeah, and I'm amazed that you can often see the difference in the egg, a little more orange or a little more brightly colored.
Yeah, I know.
And it tastes great, too. So,
yeah, true.
You know, there's a lot of benefits there, and especially from a foodie perspective as well.
You have to be a good cook, because the number one thing for a cook is they want to know what their basic thing tastes like before they know what kind of things to add.
Yeah.
It's a gifted cook that can take a wide variety of flavors and turn them into something. And I get it when modern chefs prefer that standardized egg, because they can pretty be reliable what it's going to taste like
true.
If they add these gizmos.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know it. If you want the real deal,
yep.
So your CSA that you worked with was probably the same as the previous guest, which was Angie Cook. Coke, I should say her name right. I think it's Coke. And do you know Angie? Have you you saw her? You had some familiarity with what she's.
I was looking into CSAs in the area, and her name did come up. I actually haven't had a chance to meet her personally, but I've been pleased with the work that she's done, and been glad to join a CSA or work at a CSA that's a little closer to my house.
Yeah.
I'm more in the northeastern side of Waterloo, and she's in St. Agatha there.
True.
So yeah.
I wonder how many CSAs are in the area now. There's a couple of people around, and they haven't quit doing it, so they're either making some money or enjoying it too much or something.
They often fill up quick, though, so I encourage people to to find them early.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, well, that's good. So anything else we should cover here? I think we did pretty fair justice to making people aware of some of the pleasures and enhanced enhanced appreciation of life that can be gotten by participating more in food production and so on. So check out your blog. That's well written. You're going to write some more for those guys?
You know what? That's certainly a possibility. I encourage people to do research when they can and look into the benefits of local food. Mm-hmm. And FoodLink's a great organization to start with if you're in the Waterloo region.
And what's on your plan for after this show? You're going to go back to school? What are you be doing from a year from now in December?
You know what? That's a great question, and I'd be glad to come back on and fill you in on what happens. I can't speculate right now. But
you're done school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can keep on writing, and you can get yourself primed up to go back to the CSA or not, and so it'll be interesting to see what...
Well, it's a good possibility if I'm back there.
Well, you know, from a business perspective, you point out this, it appears that there's still more demand, and I think I was reading somewhere where there's actually the maximum demand in a society is 20% of the consumers will buy, have the presence of mind or the financial means to buy a brand.
Mm-hmm.
A store bought is not a brand. It's, you know, it's commodity agriculture, but a brand is like free-range organic and all that kind of stuff,
exactly.
CSA. So there appears to be room yet in that sector of agriculture, production agriculture.
There's huge potential, and I'm excited about it.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it wouldn't be totally unreasonable to have the CSA. I'm going to call it me and my dad CSA.
You know what? I'll come and fill you in the developments, and whether it's more vegetables or chickens or what have you, I'm going to fight the good fight and try and raise awareness, and you're doing a great job here, and thank you a lot for having me on.
Well, I just was going to say thanks so much for coming on and being part of the show. We'll get that online, and we'll look forward to having some more fun maybe next year about the same time. Perhaps I'll see your dad sooner than later. We'd never know. He may take a trip up from Brantford once in a while. Actually, I got to mention that there's a spot in Brantford like going to. We'll talk about that after the show is over.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. Okay, with that, folks, it's the Agriculture Show. We're calling a wrap here on this December 17th, episode number 68. And with my guests today have been Alexander Sherma and his dad, Richard. So we'll see you next week, and Merry Christmas. We don't see you for then. Bye for now.